I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Roaming Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out, roamingoz.com.au.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, we've got two on the show this week.
Right.
We're going to talk to Dick Wagner.
Yes.
Well, actually, you're going to be talking to Dick Wagner.
That's correct, from Southern Cross Opals in Whitecliffs.
That's right. And I'll be chatting with Jeff Diaz from Checkweight.
That's correct. And what is the subject this week, Phil?
Well, Lynn, we're actually talking about something totally different this week. Normally we talk about things like caravans, motorhomes, fifth wheelers.
ATMs, GVMs.
Yes, trucks versus cars and utes and so on and so forth. But this week we're actually talking about horse floats.
Oh, that's an interesting subject.
It is, it is, it is. And there's a lot of horse floats out there on the road that have been, observed as being overweight. Too many passengers in the vehicle, too many horses in the float. So it is a very important subject, and Jeff's decided to talk about that one this week.
Oh, very good. That will be interesting.
Absolutely fantastic subject. All this business with the acronyms. You know what I mean? It's such an important subject and such a grey area. And people really should be listening to it, because it doesn't matter if you're towing a caravan or a horse float or a box trailer or a boat. We're going to talk about boats one week as well.
Right. Okay. Very good.
Before we do those two interviews, though,
right,
I'd like to play a song right at the start. We don't often do this.
No, we don't. It's very rare.
I've selected a song by John Williamson, and it's all about opal mining.
Yes.
Okay. Now,
not Whitecliffs?
No, because I couldn't find one for Whitecliffs except the Whitecliffs of Dover by
not suitable.
Vera Lynn, pre-war classic.
Yeah.
Can't go there.
No.
So the one I've selected is a number called Lightning Ridge, because Lightning Ridge, as you know, is an opal field as well.
That's correct.
It's an opal town. What a fabulous place it is.
Very, as well as Cooper Pedy.
It is. Well, they're worlds apart, though. Lightning Ridge is like cosmopolitan. And Cooper Pedy's very dusty.
Yes, but just, so is Whitecliffs.
Just like Whitecliffs, okay? So I'm going to start off with that song, and then you and I are going to tell the listeners a little bit about the town and the area of Whitecliffs itself.
Yes, that's correct. Yes, we are.
So we've got a great load of information coming your way, listeners, as also a fabulous selection of music
as requested by the people we interview.
So what do you reckon, Lynn?
On with the show.
Don't ask any questions, don't snoop around his claim. He'll be out with a dog and a shotgun. Who knows what he's hiding, or why he makes his stand? Men like him are buried alive with opals in their hands. Well, they say he came from Lismore, well, that's about all we know. He came for a weekend only 20 years ago. Well, he must have had money in the bank, for he's found a lot more than potch. For every month he sends a cab for another case of scotch. He's a dreamer, he's a drinker, a bull ant in a hole. He's a schemer, he's a thinker, he's a lonely soul. He's gouging for the opal like a wombat or a mole, way out there at Lightning Ridge. Down below the leopard wood, below the bimble box, get your thrill on Lunatic Hill. Flashes of dancing colour, green and gold and red. Mix it with black and you're on your back, digging until you're dead. Well, it's not about a fancy car, it's not about the cash. They passed the hat for a swimming pool and built it in a flash. No, it's all about the opal, you get it in your eye. You see a glimpse of heaven with angels in the sky. And you're a dreamer, you're a drinker, a bull ant in a hole. You're a schemer, you're a thinker, You're a lonely soul, you're gouging for the opal like a wombat or a mole, way out there at Lightning Ridge. Sing with me. He's a dreamer, he's a drinker, a bull ain't in a hole. He's a schemer, he's a thinker, he's a lonely soul. He's gouging for the opal like a wombat or a mole, way out there at Lightning Ridge. Way out there at Lightning Ridge.
So what do you think of that, Lynn?
Yeah, very good.
Johnny Williamson's Lightning Ridge. From his Mulga to Mangoes album. Did you know that was his 11th studio album?
No, I did not.
Did you know it was released in August of 1994?
No, I did not know that either.
And it peaked at number 14 on the ARIA charts and was certified gold.
Wow. Well, there you go.
There you go indeed. Well, we're not talking about gold, listeners. We're talking about opals. Yes. And the town of White Cliffs.
Now, White Cliffs is a small town in outback New South Wales. White Cliffs is around 255 kilometres northeast of Broken Hill and 93 kilometres north of Wilcannia. Now, it has a population of around 148.
Not a lot of people, Lynn, 148.
No, not many.
Not really. A lot of dust and flies. There'd be a lot more flies there than people.
Probably more goats and emus as well.
Crikeys. Now, the town was established in the late 19th century. When opal was discovered. Now, opal has been mined ever since. The first Australian opal was found 20 years before in Queensland in 1872 when a party of kangaroo hunters were operating in the White Cliffs area. One of them, who had left the party to track down a wounded kangaroo over some low, stony hills, picked up a pretty shiny stone which appealed to him. When taking back the stone, they suspected it could be opal, with a local jeweller confirming it. He advised them to get as much opal as possible since this could be more profitable than kangaroo hunting. Now, when the group filed their claim, opal had not yet been listed under gemstones and it was decided to file the claim under the Gold Mining Act.
Interesting. Now, many of the residents live underground, using mining equipment to dig extensive homes in the hillside to avoid the intense heat outside. There are also two underground motels in the town and it's becoming more dependent on tourism.
Absolutely. Fabulous place. There's a place there which we're going to have on next week's program called The Dugout.
Yes, I know. Okay. They are amazing.
That is the most amazing place, listeners, okay? Yep. The Dugout. So let me tell you a little bit more about White Cliffs. Now, White Cliffs is the site of Australia's first solar power station.
Yeah, interesting.
Absolutely. The White Cliffs Solar Station was built back in 1981, producing 25 kilowatts and upgraded in 1996 to produce 45. Now, we're using the same collector dishes, but with much better technology.
Yeah, now it just sits there as a white elephant.
It's a white elephant in White Cliffs. Now, Lynn, I think it's about time you get on to chatting with Dick Wagner from
Southern Cross Opals.
Hello, this is Lynn and we're Roman Oz and today we are at White Cliffs and we're chatting to Dick at the Southern Cross Opals. How are you today, Dick?
Oh, any day in White Cliffs is wonderful.
Oh, it's a beautiful day. The sun's shining, the sky's blue.
I've even had some Victorians in my shop today.
Yes.
Saying how, oh, it's a bit warm. Cut it out. It's only 28, 29 degrees.
Well, yeah, Victorians would be like that. Sorry, Victorians. So, Dick, how long have you been here in White Cliffs?
Okay, so I've been full-time for 22 years.
Yeah.
That's mining. I pegged a claim back in 2000.
Right.
And found some opal and basically went back, quit my job and said, sorry, boss, I'm becoming an opal miner. And
everyone said,
you're crazy, and I think they're spot on.
Yep. So the wife was quite happy to move here?
It's all the wife's fault. She was the one back in 1985. We're originally from Bensdale, down in East Gippsland, on the Gippsland Lakes down there. And sitting on the beach one day, having a quiet drink, and the wife said, want to go somewhere different for holiday and want to go and find an opal.
Right.
So I had a look around, and there was Lightning Ridge or Cooper Pedy. It was all the opal fields that I knew.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, Lightning Ridge was a bit closer. And then I got talking to my mum, lived in Warrigal, and mum said, go to Whitecliff, she'll love it up there.
Yep.
Found on a map and said, yep, we can do that. So us and the four kids bundled into the car and borrowed a 6x4 trailer off a mate.
Yep.
And bought all our camping gear, and we came to Whitecliffs in 1985. Driving home in the car, and the kids said, oh, Dad, that was great fun. Can we do it again next holiday? So for many years it was the cooler months holidays were in Whitecliffs, and yep. the summer months we spent on the beach down in, out from Bairnsdale.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. So the best of both worlds, and then you moved here.
Yes, in 2000, in 1991 we bought the underground house, the dugout. Right. That was our holiday home.
Yep.
But in 2000 I went out in the field and got a hand, one of the old miners from here, asked him the question. I said, was there somewhere that you'd mined
yep.
that you thought there was opal that you couldn't find?
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, there was one place. So anyway, he took me out there and we re-pegged this old claim that he'd worked back in the 80s. And I did all the paperwork, sent it into the mines department. It came back and we were back later on in the year.
Yep.
And I just said to the wife one day, I'm taking the generator and the jackhammer and the leads and lights and ladders and everything out to the mine. Can you bring me out some lunch, please? And, okay, all right. So she fronted out with some lunch and I'm sitting up on the surface. Everything's turned off, nice and quiet. And she just said, hey, what's going on here? And I said, have a look in the bucket.
Oh.
And old Joe, the guy that had mined it back in the 80s, yep. he'd stopped about 4 inches
from
where the opal seam started. And I basically was on opal for the best part of every day for 3 years.
Wow. Ended up with
bucketfuls out of it. Some absolutely brilliant stuff.
Yep.
Graded down to some stuff that was just average, but, yep. You know, a bit of everything. And, the wife, my wife, my daughter and my granddaughter came up to visit one day and my daughter said, well, come on, show us some of this opal you've been spruiking about. So I just had a square of shade cloth I tipped out in the ground and dipped out 2 20-litre buckets of opal.
Ooh.
And my daughter just went, oh, gee, look at all this, you know. And then she stopped and she said, oh, Dad, who's seen all this? And I just pointed to my wife, my daughter, my granddaughter and myself. And I said, us, that small group, you know.
Yep.
So at that stage, I was a kept man. My wife was working and I was just up here enjoying.
Oh, so she was working back in Victoria. Yes, oh, right, yeah. Okay.
So she was still working and any guys out there thinking of, you know, if you could handle that sort of thing, I can 100% recommend it.
What's brilliant. That? The opal mining or the wife being away?
The whole box of dice, yes. It's you couldn't do any better.
But she's here now, though.
No, no. She was here up until a few weeks ago, but it's gone back down south.
Oh, okay, to see the grandkids and everything.
Yeah, yep. So, and grandson's wedding and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, but she gets the blame for it all. But, yeah, we found all this opal, and what are we going to do with it? So, at that stage, I was just a full-time miner.
Yeah.
I was having fun, you know, it was great. So
you've got it all hidden, but you didn't know what to do with it.
Didn't know what to do with it. Yeah, anyway, so we sat down to talk about it for a few days and decided we'd put a bit of gold and silver out it, open a shop, and that was 2003.
Yep.
So now my day consists of basically I mine from 7 o'clock in the morning to 9. I come back and have a quick shower and shave and brekkie and run the shop from 9 to 5.
Right.
Do that 6 days a week.
Yep.
I get a bit of time off on Sunday.
Yes.
I go and play golf for a couple of hours on Sunday
morning. Oh, so there's a golf course here?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it would be a bit rocky. So is it grass or is it?
Yeah, come. Grass. Have you seen much grass? And this is a pretty good year we're having now.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Oh, you've had a bit of rain.
We've had a bit of rain, yes, yeah. Right. But, there's grass on the golf course, no.
No, okay. No. So it's a bit rocky.
It is. It can be a bit rocky.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. And so in your shop, so do you send your opal to jewellers or?
No. I have a caster in Adelaide who makes us all the blank settings.
Mm-hmm.
And my son now does a lot of the work. I do get some work done in Adelaide with a professional guy down there.
Yep.
Mainly the inlay work. It's just something that he's very, very good at.
Yep.
So with that, my son now has taken over the mantle to do most of the rest of the work. So.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's good. So it's a real family business.
Yep.
So, Dick, where do you mine the opals? Is it close to town or is it a fair way out? Or?
Well, the Whitecliffs opal fields covers about 1,200 acres. And I suppose you'd call it just about in the middle of it.
Oh, right.
And from here, it's only probably a bit over a kilometre.
Oh, it's not far.
It's not far at all.
Oh, okay.
So it's a very, very condensed field. Yep. And, you know, there's a few things special about Whitecliffs.
Mm.
One of them is it's the only place where we have this, what they call a double pseudomorph, which is a Whitecliffs pineapple, which started off life as a cluster of crystals, three different sorts, as eichite, glauberite and glendonite crystals. The crystal grew that structure, and when the opal process happened, the opals come along, dissolve the crystal out and just fill them up with pure opal.
Oh, okay.
Some are common opal or what we call poch. It's back in, they were formed back in the Ice Age when this was all part of the inland sea.
Yep, yep.
Glaciers here even before that, because we do get rocks that have been transported here on a glacier from Cobar quartzite, which don't normally naturally occur around here.
Right.
So they've either skated here with a glacier and deposited, or chunks broken off as an iceberg and floated here and deposited the rock here. So
did you have any knowledge about opals before you came here, or did you learn it all and did a bit of research and everything?
Started 22 years ago knowing nothing.
No.
And I've still got it all. So, look, it's all just hit and miss.
Yep.
You learn as you go, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was just a case of initial early days back at home in the shed. We had the cutting and polishing gear back there.
Yep.
So you go out the shed of a night, and the first lesson I learnt was don't practice on good opal.
Yes.
Practice on rubbish.
Yes.
Because
otherwise, you've just lost a lot of money.
Just lost it all, yes. Yeah, yeah. So, just one of those things. It's all practice. Fortunately now my son's come on board. Rusty's been on board for about 10 years
so
now.
He has learned how to cut and polish and everything.
Younger
else.
Eyes, nimbler fingers, all that sort of stuff. He can. He's now taken over to do a lot of the cutting and the polishing for us.
Okay.
One of the other things that Whitecliffs is pretty famous for is we refer to ourselves as the first and the friendliest.
Yep.
We're the first opal field by 20 years, and we're also the friendliest. Opal fields aren't renowned for being friendly
right.
But Whitecliffs, we pride ourselves on being friendly. And with that, one of the things we offer is for people to go and noodle, fossicle noodle out in the dumps, what the old miners did.
Oh, okay, back, see if they can strike it lucky.
Yeah, just pick up a couple of bits. What the old miner, you got to remember, the old miner mined with a candle.
Mm.
And even in some situations, if they're having a bit of a bad run, they would dig in the dark and actually listen for the sound of the pick hitting glass versus the rock. So so it is possible they missed some of it.
Yep.
And one of the services we offer here is if people pick up a bit of opal out in the field, bring it in here.
Yep.
We won't work on it for them. We will show you what to do,
let
you use our gear in the workshop.
Right.
And you can bring the bit of opal in that you've found. If it's rubbish, no, we're not going to waste your time, our time on it. But if it's something that's worthwhile, and only in the last few days I've had a girl picked up quite a very, very pretty piece, a lovely bit of crystal.
Wow.
Crystal opal is what Whitecliffs is renowned for. We made that put it on a dob stick for her. A dob stick is when you have a small piece of opal so that you can hold it, so you don't have to hold it in your fingers.
Right.
Cleaned it up, polished it up. I've got some different sort of rings in there. We found a ring that suited.
Oh, lovely.
Claw set it in, glued it in as well.
Yep.
And about 40 minutes later, she walked out with this ring on her finger, the
bit
of opal that
souvenir.
She'd found. She'd polished, cut and polished, shaped it, all that sort of thing. I made her glue it in because you've got to hold it for about 10 minutes while the glue sets.
Yep.
I wasn't going to do that. So, just with that, she walked out and out into the sunshine. It was a lovely stone. I said,
lovely.
Look, that ring's worth $250, $300.
Wow.
You know, just there a bit of something that she'd picked up in the field. My next door neighbour, he's new to Whitecliffs and opaling. He picked a piece up the other day. And again, I took him into the workshop and showed him what to do. And after about 20 minutes, because what happens, we have different grits of wheels.
Right,
and the coarser grit is your shaping, but it can also put scratches in it. So you get off that wheel onto a slightly finer wheel and then a finer wheel and a finer wheel. And by the time you get to the fine wheel, it's like watching paint dry or grass grow sort of thing. And he showed me the stone after about 20 minutes or so, and I said, "Yeah, you're nearly there." You know, it took him probably another 20 minutes on the polishing wheel, and he polished it down. And I said, "Listen, mate, that's an $800 stone."
Wow.
You know, just picked it up out in the field.
Wow.
We do get a lot of bits and pieces out there that are crazed because they've been on the surface in the weather conditions out here for over 100 years. So, but yeah, and pretty much every week. We have people. We had son Rusty took some people in there yesterday to the cutting room yesterday. They had a couple of pieces. We cleaned them up, and they weren't going to amount to anything. Yeah. So you only go so far with them.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of can't make strawberry jam out of pig manure. So you just got to draw the line somewhere, and go, "Yep, righto, that's as good as we're going to get with that piece." So,
okay. Oh, that sounds interesting. So we're going to take a break now. Now, Dick, have you got a song that we can play for you?
Anything from Graham Connors.
Yep.
Just a little further north.
A little further north?
Yep.
All right, and we'll come back with more of Dick and Southern Cross Opals after that song.
Sun sinks behind me in the west. This is the time of day I love best. Salt breezes murmur through the coconut palm. As the colors change, they set a scene of tropic calm. Seagulls heading back to land. Over the mangroves and the soap pans, by a lazy creek with a six-pack and a fishing line, win back some memories and losing track of time. I head a little further north each year, leave the cities behind, out of sight, out of mind. Oh, where my troubles all disappear. I head a little further north each year. Feeling the night wrapped around me eases my mind in serenity. Ocean waves are humming on the outer reef. These balmy nights and sultry days are a welcome relief. I head a little further north each year. Leave the cities behind. Out of sight, out of mind. Whoa, up where my troubles all disappear. I head a little further north each year. I head a little further north each year. Taking my mind.
Okay, welcome back, listeners. We're with Dick at Southern Cross Opals. Now, there was a question I wanted to ask you. You keep saying the word. What is potch?
Potch. Okay, so there's two different sorts of opal. We have common opal, which is basically potch, which mm-hmm. is created as opal, but we don't get any of the actual sparkly colours out of it. Right, okay. That's what we call common opal, or you've got precious opal, which is what we put into our jewellery, got all the sparkles and the lovely colours in it, every colour of the rainbow.
Lovely. All right. Oh, okay. Now, also, too, you were mentioning earlier before we went on air about a children's cemetery.
Yeah, okay. There's our main cemeteries out here to the east, mm-hmm. and that's very, very... it's sad, but it's one of those historic places that you have to go to. They think, they're not sure, but mm-hmm. there could be up to 500 kids buried out there.
Oh, wow.
It was tragic. You know, you got to remember back in the 1890s, yes. When, you know, this was in its heyday, we had the Federation drought, which mm-hmm. ran from the early 1890s to about 1903 or 4 or something like that before it broke. So there would have been a definite shortage of water, and if they ever did get any water, they talked about the fever, typhoid,
yes.
With the bad water. So there's also a little heritage graves up behind the caravan park and heritage park up there, and you take your mind back 130-odd years ago when there was a tent there with the mum and three or four, five kids.
Yep.
Living there, and one of them got the fever, so you know, a few days later the poor kid died. So they've gone out and they've just dug a shallow grave and put some a ring of rocks around it, yep. that sort of thing. There's five rings around, and you could just imagine you stand there and you look back there and you think, yeah, well, all the kids yep. got this fever and died. Very, very sad, very tragic, but. They weren't stuck here. They nearly were. Yeah. You know, they were carting water in from Will Canyon with bullock teams.
That'd take certainly a while because that's like 100 kilometres.
Yeah. Yep. And back in those days, you would have had to leave a certain amount of water in the barrel to be able to water the bullock teams to get them back to Will Canyon to bring us more water out.
Yep.
I don't know whether the river was flowing then or whether it had actually dried up and they were using bore water.
Right.
But... yeah, it was very, very tragic times back then. But there was riches to be made here, so people, you know, just persevered with it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And any other historical things that you can tell us about the area?
Look, there's we've now got a history group here.
Oh, okay.
And there's a lot of history in the whole area. Yep. You know, like where did White Cliffs get its name from?
Yes.
And there's a few different stories. Originally, it was called Yankania. But one of the stories, and the one that's sort of my favourite, is that when they walked into White Cliffs, basically they were gold prospectors or gold miners,
mm-hmm.
and they'd caught the paddle steamer out of Victoria. They caught the paddle steamer up to Wilcannia. If they were really lucky, they had a wheelbarrow with all their worldly possessions mm-hmm. on board. So they just headed off for White Cliffs. Well, White Cliffs was on the way to Milparinca, where the next gold find was.
Right.
So on their way past White Cliffs, the signpost said White Cliffs, so many kilometres. So some of them realised that they could come in here and start digging. That's one of the things that they knew how to do.
Yes.
And find some riches. Or obviously some kept going to Wilcannia. But when you came in over what we call these Carrara Hills out to the south, because the initial find of opal was on this Turley's Hill, and the opal was created underwater years ago when this was all part of the Eromanga Sea.
Yep.
So the water's gone back into the polar caps, back south pole, north pole, and eventually, just through weathering over absolutely millions and millions of years, the dirt's washed away, the seabed, and just left the opal exposed there. So that's how they first found it. So they saw it disappearing into the hill and they could just trench into the hill and find it. But they dipped their spoil over the hill and eventually they got enough spoil over the hill that when you walked in over on those Carrara Hills over there, it looked white and it reminded them of the White Cliffs of Dover. So that's one story.
Yep.
Another one is that when you go out to the west and you look back here, there's a white mirage looking into the... And we have postcards of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but... As most people probably came in from the south and not the west, it's probably more likely that it was just what they could see, the white the white spoil that was dipped out of the mine. So.
Oh, interesting. And Turley's Hill, is that obviously named after somebody?
Yeah, Wollaston Turley was one of the original opal finders here. There was six in the original party. They were out culling roos and saw this pretty stone on the ground, didn't know what it was, picked up a few bags of it. And eventually, it was quite a while later, you know, years later, that they actually got to Adelaide, and one of them knew a geologist. So they took it to the geologist, and the story goes he had £150 in the bank. Now, in 1888, that would have bought you half a dozen houses.
Yeah,
a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
And he thought, I'm not going to give it all to him, so he offered him £140 for the parcel. Mm. So, of course, they were just gobsmacked. They just thought, you know, this just can't happen. Mm. Anyway, so they... they grabbed the money and decided to come back. And in those days, your lease was 40 acres. Mm. And they had the tribute system here where the miners came in and worked. They were given a 10-foot by 10-foot plot.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, that's why there's so many holes so close together out there in the field. They had a pick and a shovel. So they didn't have ladders. So in a lot of those holes out there, you can still see the toe holes of how they climbed in and out.
Oh, really?
A lot of money went down to about 13 or 14 feet, about 4 metres in New Day money, because that was as far down as they could pick up a shovel full of spoil and throw it out the hole. So eventually they got ropes and buckets and windlasses and that sort of stuff. But ladders, you know, sort of hardly even heard of, and especially trying to get a ladder to Whitecliff would be...
where would you get one from? You know, your local Bunnings isn't around here anywhere.
Most certainly not. So, look, and yeah, there's a few very interesting things with Whitecliffs. It was the first commercial opal field, and we call ourselves the first and the friendliest.
Yeah.
Not all opal fields, we don't think they're quite as friendly as Whitecliffs, and you've only got to be here for, you know, a few hours, and you'll meet some wonderful people.
Yes.
And they're just ever so friendly. And as you've experienced this morning, going into Lindsay and Cree's home and being absolutely gobsmacked with that.
Yes.
I explained to people, yep, come into my shop and buy a bit of jewellery. But the thing you're going to remember about Whitecliffs is going into that Lindsay and Cree's house.
Yes.
Just, he puts us all to shame. You know, 75-year-old and working like a bloody 20-year-old. So, but, a couple of things with Whitecliffs. What we find here is crystal opal, and crystal opal has a clear background. Now, every opal field has access to every colour of the rainbow and every derivative of every colour of the rainbow. And the reason you see colour in a rainbow is exactly the same reason you see colour in opal. These silica spheres we talk about, the way they stack up is what diffracts the colour out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the end of the day, it's all hard work and luck is opal mining.
Yep, yep.
You can't go out today and say, yep, I'm going to bring back some blue or some green or whatever. So,
yeah. Oh, wonderful. All right. Well, I think we better wrap it up there, Dick. We've spent enough time, you know, chewing your ear and finding out all these little things about Whitecliffs. So can we play another song for you? And we do know that Graeme Connors is your favourite singer. So what say we play...
If anyone's ever been to a Graeme Connors concert, he always leaves the best to last.
Yes, and that is...
The Ringer and the Princess.
Oh, okay. All right then. We'll play that for you. The Ringer and the Princess. Thank you, Dick.
And thank you.
We'll be back with more Roman Isles straight after Graeme Connors' Ringer and the Princess.
Everybody called him Dingo. He didn't seem to mind the name. Aboriginal and Asian blood ran 50-50 in his veins. With skin like saddle leather, an inscrutable kind of smile, beneath the brim of his akubra, he had the dreaming in his eyes. She had a bloodline back to Europe, the boss's daughter, Marianne. Home for Christmas at the station, from a boarding school in Cairns. With such a perfect face and figure, boys would blush when she walked by. Behind her back they called her princess, 'cause she had the distance in her eyes. Oh, the ringer and the princess, the dingo and the deer. I'll tell you their story if you want to hear. December rain fell with a vengeance from a cyclone in the Gulf. Bone-dried gullies turned to rivers, and plains became a sea of mud. So the boss brought everyone together, the family and the station hands, to open gates and knock down fences and give the stock a fighting chance. Well, the princess, she was out there riding right alongside the men, leading horses up to safety, trying to bring the stragglers in, till she heard a wild commotion a little further down the way. A mare was trying to cross a gully, and its foal was being washed away. Now the young have always been impulsive, the princess had no second thoughts. She rode her mount into that gully, trying to save the drowning horse. But in the midst of the raging waters, her pony lost its step and fell, and with her foot caught in the stirrup, the princess disappeared as well. Dingo saw the whole thing happen, like a man possessed, he rode straight into that swollen gully, about 100 yards below. And by the time the others got there, all hope of finding her was gone, till Dingo staggered from the water with the princess in his arms. Oh, the ringer and the princess, the dingo and the deer. I'll tell you their story if you want to hear. Now the princess owns the station, dad the boss has long since died, and although she never married, Dingo's always by her side. And still the gossips talk about them, even after all these years, about the ringer and the princess, dingo and the deer, about the ringer and the princess, the dingo and the deer.
Seven Pleasant Street Caravans have now moved to a brand new location. 11 Clayton Road, Heatherbrae is where you'll find them. Whether you're looking to sell, trade or upgrade, they'll look after you. Check out their range, Silver Valley, Hurricane, Paramount, Road Trip or their flagship Option RV. They won't be beaten on price, so get yourself a knockout deal today. They're open 6 days a week. Why not give them a call on 02-4987-5288 or check out their website, 7thstreetcaravans.com.au.
I've been everywhere.
Well, I was humping my bluey on the dusty Oodnadatta Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Oodnadatta, mate, with me you can ride. So I climbed in the cabin and I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand. I said, listen, mate, I've traveled every road in this hill land, 'cause I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert's bare, man. I've breathed the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. Been to Tullamore, Seymour, Lismore, Mooloolaba, Nambour, Moochdor, Kilmore, Moorillaba, Birdsville, Emmerville, Wallaville, Conowana, Conowine, Strathbrine, Crosspine, Nalladala, Darwin, Gingin, Lilliquin, Muckdilla, Wallamilla, Bogaville, Cumberilla, I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert's bare, man. I've breathed the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Yeah, but listen here, mate. If you've been to
Mori, Tari, Drillaby, Bamboo, Toowoomba, Gunnedah, Carringbah, Willamaloo, Dalveen, Tambourine, Ningadine, Jindabyne, Lithgow, Casino, Brigalow, Narromine, Megalong, Wyong, Tuggerong, Wangarilla, Morilla, Orcathella, Brindabella. I'm the fella who's been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert's bare, man. I've breathed the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Yeah, I know that, but if you've been to
Wollongong, Geelong, Currajong, Mullumbin, Mittagong, Molong, Drongrong, Gundawindi, Yarra Yarra, Boondah, Wollongara, Tarramurra, Boogara, Gundagai, Narrabri, Toowoomba, Golgong, Adelong, Billabong, Cabramatta, Parramatta, Wangaratta, Coolangatta. What's the matter? I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert's bare, man. I've breathed the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere.
Yeah, look, that's fine, but how about
Big Wedlong, Danlong, Woodenbong, Ballarat, Canberra, Moolpara, Yundam, Skunkclack, Plonkai, River Murray, Kari Kari, Gurawin, Terrigal, Stock, Mibble, Collaroy, Narrabeen, Bendigo, Dorigo, Bangalore, Windapur, Kirribilli, Yerrumpilly, Wallumbilly. Don't be silly, I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert's bare, man. I've breathed the mountain air, man. Of travel I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been here, there, everywhere. I've been everywhere.
Okay, mate, you've been every place except one, and you don't need my help to get there.
G'day listeners, Phil C here. This is Roman Oz, and yes, that part of the program is where we get to speak to Mr. Jeff Diath from Checkweight. Now, how are you going today, Jeff?
Going really well, Phil. Been out the boat this week on the beautiful Port Stephens, so yeah, having a good week.
Just cruising around. I've been doing a bit of fishing or sightseeing. What's been going on the boat?
Mostly sightseeing. I'm not really into the fishing yet.
Okay.
My stepson's got a rod, but I haven't got myself a rod yet.
Mm-hmm.
I've never really lived near water before to be able to go fishing, so okay. I'm looking forward to getting into the fishing, though.
Now, you know, this is one thing I don't think we've ever discussed on this particular segment, and that's boats. Now, last week we touched on horse floats, and we said we're going to discuss it this week. We've not actually discussed boats, have we?
We haven't, Phil, and I've weighed a few people that are travelling with boats on top of the vehicle, so how about we do that one next week?
Okay, not a problem. So this week, as I said to the listeners, last week we did, the Camping and Caravan Show, that's right, at Newcastle, and we mentioned we were going to talk about horse floats. So tell us everything about horse floats, the problems with towing one.
Well, I think the problems and the issues are the same and a little bit different
right.
that you have when caravans. So I suppose the same issues are that they're all subject to the same weight limits.
Okay.
So vehicles, trailers, horse floats, caravans, they're all come under the same weight limits.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about a vehicle's towing capacity, it's not a caravan towing capacity, it's a towing capacity.
Yep.
So whether you're towing a horse float or a trailer or a digger or a caravan, all the acronyms that we've talked about before all fall under the same.
Okay.
So we've weighed a few horse floats, and we're getting a lot more interest with horse floats. I mean, we did briefly mention the unfortunate accident in Tasmania, which I think was, from what I've read and heard, was probably a fatigue-related one.
Okay.
But any sort of accident, has a multiple thing. So, and I'm not saying weight was related, but if you, fall asleep at the wheel of the night time and you have that jerk and you've got a big weight, either a horse load or a caravan behind you,
yes,
it's going to make it more difficult to recover.
Okay.
And with horse floats, it's a very dynamic. So it's similar to a caravan in that the weight's always changing.
Yes.
You might have two horses this weekend and you might only have one horse the next weekend.
Right.
So you might take more tack, more saddles, more hay, more water.
Mm-hmm.
And then you throw in another horse and all of a sudden your whole weights have changed.
Yes.
So the horse float tends to be fairly heavy at the front, so toe ball heavy.
Right.
Just because where the wheels are.
Okay.
So I think owners of horse floats are getting more and more, conscious of their weights.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a similar thing, if you're going for a racing weekend or a pony club or thing, and a lot of these caravans now, horse floats have, they're a mini caravan and they have, a bed and a kitchen and water tanks and all that in
mm-hmm,
them.
Mm-hmm.
So you do really have to be conscious of your weight and where that is.
Okay. The thing with horses, though, they move around, don't they? I mean, okay, they've got four legs and they're standing on those four legs, but they do shift around in the horse float too, don't they? So wouldn't that have, changed the whole dynamics? I mean, a horse moves around because he only has a little bit of room, but still he moves around and a horse weighs a lot to begin with. So wouldn't that be something you need to take into consideration with your weight?
Never having actually towed a horse float, I would think that would be. I don't think horses move too much unless mm-hmm. they get spooked.
Yes.
Good horses, from what I've heard, don't move around a lot, mm-hmm. but they may step forward or back
yes.
a little bit. And,
yes.
You're dead right, they are going to change the weight.
Mm.
But most horse floats, too, you'll see them that the horse will be on an angle, like a 45-degree angle across.
Yes.
Some of the bigger ones, I'm talking about the trees and things like that. And that means that, the front of the horse and the rear of the horse are at different points in the horse float.
Uh-huh.
And when we've weighed horse floats at check weight, we move weight around the horse float to show the owner how that affects the tow ball weight.
Yes.
So similar to what we do with a caravan.
Mm.
And I did one horse float, it was about 6-12 months ago now, and she wanted to take two horses, but she knew she was on the limit. And we put the horses in and out to decide where was the best spot. Was the bigger horse forward or the bigger horse back the best spot for the two horses?
Mm.
Because it made a substantial difference to what the weight was on the wheels of the horse float and what was on the tow ball.
That's really interesting because imagine if you say, can I put my horse in your float? You're only taking one this weekend. Yeah, sure. And then all of a sudden you don't realise it might be a bigger horse, could weigh a lot more. So there certainly is a lot to it, isn't there, really?
There is. I mean, I think horse floats are reasonably well designed.
Yes.
But they are very heavy. And I've seen some really, really heavy ones, but weigh about 1,500 kilos, and with these kitchens can weigh as much as 1,700 or 1,800 kilos before you start putting horses in them.
Mm.
And I think the thing that people forget is, if you've got one with, water and a kitchen, so you're going to take food for yourself, and then you throw a bale of hay in, and then you've got your horse tack, your saddles and your stirrups and your blankets and all those extras, and it's all heavy.
Okay.
So it all weighs something.
So with the horse float, because I've never even been up close to one to know, do they have a compliance plate that says all those other acronyms like TARE and GVM and ATM and all this kind of stuff on a horse float?
Absolutely, all trailers, and I think it's post 89 off the top of my head, so I could be corrected on that. It was late 80s that they brought in compliance plates on trailers.
Okay.
So if you've got a 70s caravan, it might not have one.
Okay.
But what's on them is a little bit, here and there, as we've talked about before.
Yeah.
But generally they have a tear and at least an ATM.
Mm-hmm.
Most horse floats don't tend to have a tow ball weighted tear on them like caravans can.
Okay.
But they just certainly have a tear and a ATM.
Okay. So the tear weight, okay, on a horse float would be what? The weight that it's like based on the GVM? Because, the tear is what it weighs when there's nothing in it.
That's right, manufactured. So what it weighed when it was manufactured.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes,
so because it doesn't include any accessories.
Doesn't include putting in some 18 hands, Clydesdale or something that weighs 1,000 pounds or something.
No, I don't think you'd be wanting to put too many Clydesdales in a horse float.
In a horse float.
They're beautiful horses, but, they're quite big.
Oh, absolutely. Are they ever? Jeez. Fair enough. Mm. Well, is there anything else that we need to touch for the people that do? Because, I do see a lot of horse floats on the road. In fact, I saw one just the other day, and it was changing lanes, coming from a slip lane, coming across in front of me. It had one horse in the back being driven by a lady, and as she started to move across, because she was accelerating trying to get in front of me, she started to get a bit of a wobble up, and I thought, oh, my goodness. So there you go.
The same thing as applies to caravans, but what I do see a lot of is, which is a little bit different to the caravans, whereas the vehicle isn't full.
Right. Yeah,
they don't have canopies and drawers and things like that in the vehicle because they're trying to keep their overall weight down.
Okay.
But then what happens is if you load three or four horses into a horse float,
mm-hmm.
then now that is weighing more than your vehicle. And then you get that tail wagging the dog syndrome that we've talked about before.
Yes.
It's not a legal requirement that the vehicle be heavier than the trailer or the caravan or the horse boat.
Okay.
However, it is recommended by most engineers and by most people that, you have a heavier vehicle than what you're towing.
Okay, of course.
Certainly you see a lot of big horse boats with two or three horses in them that would be heavier than the vehicle.
Yeah.
And then this lady, you just use it as an example. Mm-hmm. Does she know that in New South Wales, at least, you're limited to 100 Ks? You can't do 110 even on a 10 zone because of the weight limits.
Yeah.
Like anything, slow down. Overtaking vehicles and things is a recipe for disaster, whether you're towing a caravan or a horse float.
Yeah. But this particular lady was, as I said, I was moving along the highway at a nice speed, and then where they merged on into in front of me, I could see this vehicle coming along, and I thought, oh, this will be okay. And then, no, she was going to go for that merge across, and I managed to move out of her way by going into the next lane. But it would have been a recipe for disaster if I'd had to have tried to have pulled my rig up. And as I said, when she got in front of me, she was actually had the old tail wag going because, yes, she had only one horse. And I suppose one horse is going to imbalance that trailer, isn't it, unless she's compensated on the other side with all the gear?
Absolutely, Phil. And, we've talked about balancing caravans, and balances in horse floats would be even more difficult.
Yes.
Because where your storage is pretty well set.
Uh-huh.
So if you've only got, if you've got two horses that are straight in.
Yes.
I followed one the other day, and I always look at caravans and trailers and things. And at least the owner had it on the driver's side, which I thought was good, because most of your saddles and your tack and things generally goes on the left or the passenger side.
Right.
The owner didn't, in that case, know what they were doing.
Yeah.
Which was good to see.
Mm-hmm.
If they're designed to have two, and the weight balanced, then putting one on one side will throw the balance out.
For sure.
Maybe not significantly that it would cause an accident,
but
if you have a hairy moment or wet roads or somebody pulling in front of you, well then it could upset the balance of the horse float.
Of the horse float. You'd think though that horses weigh quite a bit, don't they? You'd have to carry a fair bit of stuff on the other side, wouldn't you, to compensate for it? Because it was a two horse float, and there was only one horse in it. So
yeah. absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I think, you know, people love their horses.
Yep.
And, you know, it's dangerous in the trailer. I mean, it's illegal for people to travel in a caravan.
Of course.
When you're driving.
Yes.
For good reason.
Yep.
So, you know, you do want to look after your animals and look after your horses and make sure they get to their destination safely.
Absolutely. All right. I think we've covered it, haven't we, Jeff?
I think we've covered most things, unless any of our listeners have any questions.
Well, that'd be interesting. Anybody out there with horse floats, listeners, if you've got any tips for us or any inquiries, information, don't hesitate to send us in an email, okay? And that comes to info@romanoz.com.au. Now, Jeff, what are we going to play? What's your Aussie song for the horse floats?
Well, I couldn't really go past Darryl Braithwaite and horses.
The horses. I should have guessed it. I guessed last week when you were talking about who listens to the radio, I thought, oh, he's going to ask me for sports. And now the horses, I could have guessed it. I should have went for a guess. All right, mate. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us today.
No worries, Phil. You travel safe and enjoy the road.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, mate. Stick around, listeners. We'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after Darryl Braithwaite's The Horses.
Situation should keep us separated. You know the world won't fall apart, and you will free the beautiful bird that's caught inside your heart. Can't you hear her? She cries so loud, cast a wild note over water.
It's gonna be a little girl.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page, Spotify, or romanoz.com.au.
Tune in next week for more
Roman Oz.